Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine a factory floor. For decades, it's been those fixed, heavy industrial robots.
Right, the big arms bolted down.
Exactly. But now the scene is changing. New figures are showing up, and they're really sparking a conversation.
A big one, yeah.
We've gathered your sources, articles, research, news for a deep dive into these, well, contrasting futures presented by two very distinct robot types.
And what's truly fascinating here, I think, is how the actual physical shape of the robot can completely change how people see it.
Changes its reception.
Totally. And maybe even the whole path of automation itself. We're going to explore this collaborative versus disruptive idea for these machines.
Okay, so let's get into this tale of two robots. First up, you've got the quadrupedal ones, the four-legged kind. People often call them robot dogs, right?
Yeah, affectionately even. And they're generally seen as, collaborative tools, almost like a helper.
A helper, not a replacement.
Precisely. Like Hyundai Spot, you've probably seen videos, but industrially, it helps technicians with inspection work that's apparently highly error-prone.
Okay.
Or look at BMW's Botato, similar idea. Monitoring equipment, checking for leaks. Because they don't look human, they seem less threatening.
Non-threatening, non-competitive. That seems key.
It really does. Though it's interesting, over in China, manufacturers like Unitree, they're pushing hard on just raw performance, agility, pure capability.
Right, which is a huge contrast then to the second type, the bipedal threat, as it's sometimes framed. The humanoid robot.
Yeah, think Tesla Optimus, Figure 01. Robots designed to look, well, much more like us.
And that human-like shape, it just immediately sparks different feelings, doesn't it? Worries about job displacement.
Oh, absolutely. It instantly frames the whole thing not just as new tech, but as labor versus capital.
You saw that with the UAW stance.
Clearly. They said, look, we're not anti-technology, but we are against using it to, quote, erode labor power and suppress wages without any discussion. It's a very human reaction, isn't it?
It makes sense. And this kind of difference, it seems to play out globally too. There's this geopolitical divide in automation approaches.
Definitely. China, for example, seems to have this vanguard strategy, very top down.
Like a national mission.
Exactly. A national mandate to build a world-leading humanoid industry by 2027. And on the ground.
What does that mean?
Well, you see really fast deployment. Companies like BYD, GAC, NIO, putting them to work quickly, often with, let's say, limited labor protections and less public debate than you'd see elsewhere.
Okay, so that's one model. How does the Western approach contrast?
It's generally more focused on what they call human-robot collaboration, or HRC.
So working with humans, not just replacing them.
That's the idea. More emphasis on human-centric design, safety, regulatory guardrails, and strong unions often mean there has to be ample advance notice negotiation before tech gets rolled out. Worker well-being is
A
prioritized.
much more measured pace, it sounds like.
More deliberative, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, thinking ahead, say the 2030, where do humanoids realistically fit in?
What kind of jobs are we actually talking about?
Mostly the dirty, dangerous, and dull tasks. Things like detailed quality control, checking seat belts, door locks, that sort of thing.
Okay.
Or material handling, lifting heavy stuff. And detailed assembly, needing really accurate pickup, orientation, and wiring. And this isn't just a wish list. There's a projected gap, maybe 50 million people missing from the global workforce for these jobs.
But it's important for you, the listener, to know that not everything is automatable, right?
Yeah.
Some jobs seem pretty resistant.
Absolutely. Anything requiring real human judgment, creativity, adaptability, complex problem solving.
Like what? Give us an example.
Think about industrial machinery mechanics tracing some weird intermittent fault. That needs intuition.
Right, not just following a checklist.
Or welders who instinctively adjust amperage because they sense unseen impurities in the metal. That kind of feel, that expertise,
Yeah.
very hard to automate.
So there's nuance. Now, what about the money? The market forecasts for these humanoids seem all over the place.
They are profoundly different. You see figures for 2030 ranging from a pretty conservative, maybe USD 4 billion, up to a wildly optimistic, almost USD 50 billion.
Wow. Why such a huge gap?
It really boils down to different bets on the future. The conservative view focuses on the high initial costs, the R&D hurdles, still expensive.
Makes sense. And the optimistic view.
They're banking on rapid technological jumps. Better AI, like NVIDIA's new Isaac GR00T platform for humanoids, combined with falling hardware costs. They see much faster, wider adoption happening.
So it's a gamble on the tech curve and acceptance.
Pretty much. The big hurdles remain that high initial cost in R&D, but also navigating regulatory compliance and public resistance. Those factors will really decide which forecast wins out.
So, wrapping this up, what does it all mean for you listening? It's clear the story of robots in factories is changing fast. We're facing some big choices.
Yeah, and if you connect it to the bigger picture, the future isn't really just about the tech itself. It's about the deliberate choices we make.
Companies, government, society.
Exactly. All of us. And that leaves us with a critical question, doesn't it? Are we going to choose a path that genuinely augments human potential, making work better?
Yeah.
Or one that ends up leaving a lot of people behind? That's the choice we're navigating right now.